is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Iran bombed two bases in Iraq last night that housed U.S. troops. No one was injured, but it was Iran's boldest attack on America since the 1970s. President Trump addressed the strike today from the White House, and he had a message for Iran.
As long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon.
To discuss both this evolving situation and other issues for Congress, we're joined by Congresswoman Lori Trahan. She represents Massachusetts' 3rd District and serves on the House Armed Services Committee. Congresswoman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Oh, thank you for having me, Tiziana.
And you can call the Congresswoman. Call us with your thoughts. How do you feel following last night's retaliation or hearing the president's reaction to it today? What would you like your congressional leaders to do next? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, Congresswoman, the president's remarks were not long today. He said a lot of different things. A couple of the highlights: that the general killed in last week's drone strike should have been killed a long time ago, that the death sent an important message to terrorists, and he warned Iran against its nuclear aspirations. What were your overall reactions to his remarks?
Well, you know, first, I just want to start by saying how grateful I am that no American or Iraqi troops or civilians were killed in last night's attack. I think we were all scared for them, as well as their families here at home. And, you know, I want to be clear. I share this with many of my colleagues. I don't want war with Iran, and the American people don't either. You know, just a few hours ago, the president did address the nation, and he signaled what appears to be a possible freeze and immediate hostilities. And this is welcome news. It's imperative that we take this moment to pause and that cooler heads prevail and we start talking about engaging NATO. But we shouldn't lose sight of the truth that this didn't have to happen at all. And we are not out of the woods yet.
Let's talk about the drone strike. You just said it didn't have to happen at all. Today, the president reiterated that General Soleimani was planning an attack on U.S. interests. There really haven't been any further details either last week or this week beyond that. But you and other members of Congress got a briefing from the administration today. What can you tell us about that or other key information?
You know, we were just briefed by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Defense Secretary Mark Esper, among others. And I've also read the classified report that the president sent to Congress. And, you know, while I cannot get into so many of the details, it is not clear to me that the justification for the attack on Soleimani was based on a truly imminent threat to the American people. I mean, the current situation in the region is a tinderbox of President Trump's own making through his maximum pressure campaign.
Although it's been a tinderbox for at least a couple of administrations. Really, one might argue that it's been a tinderbox of one kind or another since 1979.
Absolutely. We could go back through history, but I want to be clear-eyed about the fact that this whole spiral began with President Trump's decision to pull us out of the Iran nuclear agreement. Their attacks on shipping lanes, their shooting down of our drones, and the uptick in skirmishes with their Iraqi-based proxies, which tragically led to the death of an American contractor, they all trace back to that decision. We had been trending in a positive direction while we were participating in the JCPOA. So, you know, this is, it very much became more of a tinderbox in the last, 18 months.
You mentioned the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. The president made a point of suggesting today that last night's bombing was tied to that and agreements President Obama made. Here we go.
The missiles fired last night at us and our allies were paid for with the funds made available by the last administration.
Now, we know that's a claim that's been made for a while. And to be clear, the funds that were released after the JCPOA were Iranian funds, not American funds given over. But what do you make of the fact that the president reiterated that argument in an address to the American people today?
You know, I'm not going to get into trying to analyze this president's obsession with the Obama administration. But I will say this: look, for too long, Congress has allowed presidents to conduct or bring us to the brink of war without congressional approval. This trend of Article I ceding power to Article II, it didn't start with Donald Trump, but his handling of this current crisis is the clearest example we've seen of why we in the 116th Congress have to do something about it.
To that point, CNN is reporting that Representative Catherine Clark says the House hopes to vote on a war powers resolution this week. It would call for removal of U.S. armed forces from hostilities with Iran that aren't approved by Congress. Is now the time to do it, and will you support it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we don't know yet when it will come to the floor, but when it does, I will absolutely vote in support of the war powers resolution to limit the president's military actions regarding Iran and reassert Congress's long-established oversight responsibilities when it comes to deploying military assets. In fact, I've previously voted to terminate the 2002 AUMF and against any funding for conflict with Iran absent a new AUMF or official declaration of war through the committee that I sit on. So, you know, it's clear to me, and I think to so many others, that the stakes are too high. We've come too close to the brink of yet another endless war to not take stock and change our course.
The Obama administration arguably pioneered drone strikes years ago. Should Congress have pushed back much more firmly and much sooner on presidential powers in this and related areas?
You know, like I said, I do believe that for too long Congress has abdicated its power on the use of military force. And we are in uncharted, territory in terms of using those AUMF powers that are outdated, frankly. The administration should come and make the case to Congress, for any time that they're going to use military force. We cannot risk being in another endless war without, that proper due diligence.
So, I'd like to take a call. We have some callers getting ready to come in. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Rick on the line from Newton. Rick, what's your question to the Congresswoman?
Hi. First, I'd like to agree with the Congresswoman about what got us into this situation and the intent of President Trump to get out of the Iran agreement that was working and that he just basically wouldn't acknowledge. But my question is that the Democrats, unfortunately, have been ineffective in their ability to rein President Trump in any way. If anything, it prods him into taking action and doing things that are detrimental as far as I feel. I wonder, does the Congresswoman agree that pressure from our allies, Germany, France, England, would be the most effective way if they were to unite and say to the United States, say to President Trump, we're not putting up with this any longer?
Let's give it to the Congresswoman to respond, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Absolutely. I mean, look, I think that there is a lot of consensus around engaging with NATO, talking about peaceful solutions, working with our allies so that these are not unilateral decisions made by this president who, frankly, this has been a very disjointed and erratic foreign policy on a whole host of fronts. It's absolutely true that, we should not be going this alone. When we first got into JCPOA, we did that in concert with the global community, and I think that's what made it strong. Prior to our withdrawal, Iran was compliant with the agreement that had been struck with our international partners, and we have to get back to that place. That is when our foreign policy works best.
Let's stay on NATO for a minute. Here is the president today calling on NATO to take a bigger role in Middle East peace.
Today, I am going to ask NATO to become much more involved in the Middle East process. Over the last 3 years, under my leadership, our economy is stronger than ever before, and America has achieved energy independence.
We know America still imports about 15% of its oil from the Gulf region, but he's making this tie between energy dependence and strategic interest and allies in the Middle East. How do you comb that out or prioritize that?
So I think that it was welcome news to hear the president talk about our NATO allies and the leverage that they have in these ongoing negotiations. I think the question then becomes, is he going to, is he going to act that way? You know, the president has, unfortunately, a history of, you know, sending out tweets and not exercising restraint and going it alone. I'm sure that our NATO allies are, you know, they're ready. They're ready to, you know, work in concert. They, you know, they want global security as well. And right now, this region has been destabilized by his doing. So I think, look, these are our allies who have worked across administrations on bringing peace to this region, and are, you know, we've got common interest here. The question is he going to use those diplomatic tools the way other administrations have?
So I guess as I'm listening to you, part of what I'm thinking is other administrations, let's say from the Bush administration forward for this conversation, have used a range of diplomatic tools in the Middle East. And it has remained messy and it has remained complicated. We have heard some argue that this more sort of bloody nose approach may be necessary and important as a step in dealing with the strategic situation there. Is that possible? And what do you say to that framing of what's happening now?
No, I think the president has only shown, you know, that he can use these blunt force instruments, right? He's used sanctions to, you know, as part of his maximum pressure campaign, but with no articulation of what that is intended to do. Is that supposed to bring Iran to the table to get them into a better deal? There has been no, there's just been no cohesive, articulated, or clearly not a well-understood strategy. And I think that's what's different about other administrations. I mean, when we have a strategy, then we use all the tools at our disposal. We use our diplomatic tools. We use our allies. We use our trade policy. We use so many of the things beyond sanctions and military force. And certainly we don't antagonize our partners by going out and tweeting in the middle of the night to openly antagonize a regime that is not acting, you know, in accordance with the norms of others. And so I think that's the difference. There's no cohesive strategy. There is no engagement with our allies. We have this moment. I mean, we're fortunate right now that we have this moment to pause and to collectively take an approach that will de-escalate tension in the region. And I think that it's really important that, you know, this president treat this moment with the preciousness that it is.
I know.
Go ahead.
Well, I know you can't, there's a lot you can't talk about in what you heard in the briefing you heard today. But we're after the briefing, and you are referring to the administration as having no strategy, which makes me think that you didn't hear anything in the briefing today that would lead you to believe or feel comfortable that there is a coherent strategy going forward. Am I correct in surmising that in what I'm hearing from you?
Yes, I haven't heard anything that would indicate to me that there are certain goalposts that we are working toward outside of, you know, the what we often hear, which is Iran to behave like a normal nation. You know, we need more than that. We need to understand exactly what the performance metrics are that we are working toward. And that's not clear.
Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join our conversation with Congresswoman Lori Trahan. Jim is on the line from Watertown. Jim, go ahead.
Yes, with all due respect, I think the Congresswoman has it backwards. I think Trump ultimately wants to get the troops out of Iraq, and that's what he's planning to. And I think he saw Soleimani as the chief obstacle to getting the troops out. I think that he's finally exercising some judgment and has a plan and strategy to precisely get the troops out. So for the congressperson to now say they're going to put constraints on Trump, he's already doing what they say they want to have done. It's like anything he does, though, they criticize. He's finally making progress by showing our strength, what we can do, and we don't want to do it. But we had to get rid of Soleimani because he was probably the biggest thing holding Iran back.
So let's invite the Congresswoman to respond, Jim.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Jim. Look, there's no question that Soleimani was an unquestionably evil man with the blood of countless American service members on his hands. But the question before us wasn't, was he a bad person? It's rather, was this strike going to make us more safe or less? And, you know, this administration does assert that this was done to protect Americans and to avoid a war, not to start one. But just think about in the days following this strike, what we've seen. Last night, there was an Iranian counterstrike. The Iraqi parliament, you know, has passed measures to expel U.S. troops. The, you know, Americans are evacuating from Iraq. U.S. and NATO forces announced the suspension of all counter-ISIS operations. You know, our own government is issuing warnings of an elevated threat of attack. And Iran is getting closer to acquiring a nuclear weapon. So, and 15,000 more troops are, you know, in the area today than there were 6 months ago. It's just hard for us to claim that we're safer today or that we're withdrawing from this region today, you know, when clearly all those indicators are going in the wrong direction.
So what do you think the strategy should be? What do you think are some key elements of what the U.S.'s strategy should be given where we are right now?
You know, I think this is when, you know, and I know I've said it before around engaging with our allies, but this is where we need our diplomats. This is where we need people who understand the complexity of this region. And
do you think we have the diplomatic corps that we need in place right now? You know, a number of experts we've talked to over the last few months have suggested that, especially with Iran expertise, that a lot of that's been gutted.
Yeah, I think that we've seen on display, even in the last, you know, 6 months, the caliber of diplomats that we still have at our disposal. Whether they're being deployed is a different question. Whether they're being listened to, whether their counsel is being sought out, that's a different question. And frankly, that's the reason why we want Congress to be engaged, so that we can ensure that we're using our diplomacy and our diplomacy first and foremost. This is the time where we've got an opportunity to change course here and to come up with a strategy to get back to a place where we were with the JCPOA and start having some targets so that, you know, we can move forward. And I just haven't seen that to date. I don't like the fact that we've got 15,000 more troops in this region today than we did 6 months ago. And I certainly don't like, you know, the activities that we've seen in the last, you know, 2 weeks. So I think we've got, this is an opportunity for us to change course and to set a strategy for the region.
We've heard some reports of Iranian nationals and Iranian Americans with U.S. citizenship, including some Massachusetts residents experiencing issues at ports of entry. And this is even before the death of General Soleimani. Have you heard such concerns from any of your constituents, or do you know of people who are having those problems?
Yeah, no, we're deeply concerned about that. I mean, it's just not, who we are as a country. And we're monitoring certainly what we've been hearing, especially up on the Canadian border. But we haven't received a case ourselves yet. But, you know, we stand ready to help whomever of our constituents who call. But, I mean, just, you know, first and foremost, it's just not who we are as a country, and we need to make sure that, you know, we are calling that out, and we have to make sure that we're rectifying what's happening on our border and across the country.
Okay, we've only got you for a couple more minutes, so let's switch gears. I do want to ask, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said this week that he has the votes to go forward with a Senate impeachment trial that doesn't take witnesses right up front. Is it time to move forward with the trial now?
Well, let me start by saying, the full weight of history is on Congress right now, specifically Senate Leader McConnell and the Senate Republicans. I do believe that they are, you know, out of excuses. I mean, every single argument that they've made against holding a fair trial, including subpoenaing documents and hearing from fair witnesses, has just fallen apart. With every day, you know, there's new and incriminating evidence that's uncovered that substantiates what we already know, and that's that President Trump abused his power for personal and political gain. This alone demands a fair trial with documents and witnesses. I mean, I know many of my colleagues have already said it, but it's worth repeating. You know, trials have witnesses and cover-ups do not.
So switching gears again, the House Ethics Committee has extended campaign finance investigation against you about whether $300,000 loaned to your campaign in 2018 came from your husband, which is above the $2,700 that was then allowed in the primary or general elections. You have said since the beginning of the inquiry that the money came from a shared account. What is your reaction to the investigation being ongoing?
Absolutely. So there is an inquiry that was based on a politically motivated complaint from a right-wing organization that exists to basically attack Democrats like me. But it's why I've been completely transparent with my constituents about my use of personal funds in my campaign. And I have nothing to hide here. I mean, anything anyone would want to know has already been put forth months ago in the Medium piece that I wrote. Certainly, you know, the legal response, which we released, also, you know, reinforces, you know, what we've already said. You know, I'm fully cooperating with the Ethics Committee, and I remain confident that when they have the opportunity to review my inquiry, it will be resolved favorably.
Before we let you go in our last minute, you held the first public meeting to save the Lowell Spinners yesterday. We'll have the owner of the Spinners on next. But according to a leaked report, it looks like the team could lose its major league affiliation with MLB's plan to eliminate some small clubs, although the Globe has said maybe also they could be saved but no longer be affiliated with the Sox. What would it mean to Lowell for the team to both keep its affiliation but not with the Red Sox?
You know, the Lowell Spinners are as much a part of our community as, you know, our national park, you know, the Merrimack River or UMass Lowell. And part of that is the affiliation with the Boston Red Sox, which is why we're working so hard on, you know, on two fronts, right? We obviously don't want to see Major League Baseball wipe out 42 minor league teams. It would be devastating to communities like Lowell from an economic perspective, but psychologically and culturally, you know, it's just been such a huge part of our city. But then certainly, you know, there's it's great to have the Red Sox affiliation. It is the world.
I'm so sorry. I got to break in for you there. Thank you so much, Congresswoman Lori Trahan. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.